This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937, Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Too big to fail has kind of been a buzzword on Wall Street the past couple of months. This or that company being just too important for the government to let it go under. Funny thing, then, that the bailout plan wasn't, don't you think? Too big to fail, that is. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, committed to helping Americans save on gas and become energy independent at publictransportation.org. And by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday, the 29th of September. Don't know yet, to be honest, whether it's going to go down in history as yet another Black Monday. Either way, good to have you with us today as we continue with Fallout, our special coverage of the financial crisis. Now what is a fair question to be asking at this point, and we will do just that with two people who voted no on the plan that failed today. We'll try to figure out why Henry Paulson couldn't carry the day. And forget about a 777-point loss on the Dow. We will introduce you to the really scary part of the market, short-term credit. The final vote in the House today was 205 yeas, 228 nays. Despite pleas from both Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Minority Leader John Boehner, there were significant numbers of no votes from both sides of the aisle. What we're going to do for the next couple of minutes is try to figure out why. We spoke earlier today with Congresswoman Marilyn Musgrave. She's a Republican from Colorado, the eastern part of the state, and she was in the no majority today.
Sure, we should look at Wall Street and help them work their way out of this problem, but not at the expense of the taxpayers. Taxpayers shouldn't have to bail them out.
There were more Democrats voting no today than Republicans, more than would be suggested even by the majority that the Democrats enjoy. One of those no votes came from Representative Peter DeFazio. He's a Democrat from Oregon. Congressman, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
What was it about this bill you didn't much care for?
Well, I thought the whole premise on which it was based was false, that somehow if the taxpayers borrowed $700 billion and took a bunch of bad bets from Wall Street, that this would bring about liquidity and then ultimately would somehow filter down, help Main Street, help housing, help the basic economy. But beyond that, I think there are, you know, we've heard from William Isaacs, head of the FDIC. He ran it during the last previous greatest financial crisis history in America, savings and loan. And he said a couple of simple steps could deal with the bank liquidity issue. So I think there are practical proposals out there that just weren't heard. In addition to that, Paulson didn't at all get, in my mind, to the underlying part of the economy, the problems in housing and the declining housing market. There are credible economists who said, hey, if you don't deal with housing, you may be taking care of this week's bad securities, but guess what? Next week, if housing goes down another 5%, there's going to be a whole batch more bad securities out there. You've got to deal with the underlying problems in housing and the underlying problems in the economy.
Well, if there had been relief for homeowners of some kind, mortgage holders of some kind in this bill, would you have supported it?
Oh, that would be nowhere near enough. I mean, because the whole precipice or, you know, foundation on which this thing was built was faulty, again, in my mind. borrowing the money and throwing it at the top.
What do we do now?
I think we all take a deep breath. Bush could, between tonight and tomorrow morning, implement the regulatory changes proposed by Mr. Isaacs. I'm working with Lloyd Doggett from Texas. We're actually drafting legislation that would do that if the president won't do that. We just need to make clear that we intend to take action. This isn't the far right of the Republican Party saying we need to do nothing. There is a, we can put together, a majority of the House just on the Democratic side with a good proposal. And I think there's a number of Republicans who would come along with a better proposal. This one was not a good proposal.
Do you think Speaker Pelosi made a mistake bringing this one to the floor?
Look, you know, they were handed a really bad starting point. They shouldn't have accepted the premise. Henry Paulson sent down a 3-page insult to Congress saying, you let me either borrow or give me $700 billion authorization to print it, and you get out of the way. That was what he sent down. People said, oh, he's just a tough bargainer. I said, no, that's not a bargaining position. Plus, I reject the basic premise. We should have put his plan up for a vote on Tuesday last week. It would have gotten zero votes. Then we would have been in the negotiating position to push him back. They then started negotiating with him, and you just can't get very far starting from a failed premise.
Do you reject the administration's premise that the credit markets are still frozen?
There are apparently problems in the big money parts of the credit market, not yet locally. My credit unions, community banks are still lending. I've been in touch with them. They did say there's a new phenomenon where some businesses locally who are very solvent are having their credit lines cut off by commercial banks under orders from the FDIC. So the FDIC has got to, stop making things worse and start thinking about how they can regulate to make things better.
How's your constituent service phone line been ringing this week?
Hasn't stopped ringing. We're getting up to our 3,000 phone calls, over 3,000 emails, running well more than 100-1 against it. But that's not what I based my opinions on. I was the first member of the House of Representatives to speak out against this plan last Monday morning.
Do you think both sides of the leadership, though, misjudged that anger?
Absolutely. And I think they were in a rush to try and pass this before people went home and heard it.
Peter DeFazio, Democrat of Oregon. Congressman, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Henry Paulson woke up this morning set to become the most powerful man in Washington. Sounds like an exaggeration, I know, but it's really not too far from the truth. The bill that Congress rejected today would have given him unprecedented new powers over the markets. But lawmakers clearly had other ideas. From Washington, Marketplace's Steve Henn has more on the day's events.
When Bernanke and Paulson asked for $700 billion, everyone knew it would be a tough sell. But the stakes were enormous. Steve Bartlett is president of the Financial Services Roundtable.
No one likes it, but it's about the economy, and it's about the economy of the 340 million Americans.
Paulson tried to craft a plan that would satisfy moderates in both parties. It didn't work. At about 1:45 Eastern time, Wall Street and Washington stood still. The massive bailout of the financial services industry was clearly in trouble. 94 liberal Democrats, like Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey, were against it.
Why isn't Wall Street paying for the mess they created?
They were joined by more than 100 conservative Republicans, like Texas Congressman Jeb Hensarling.
I fear that ultimately it may not work.
The rank and file were revolting. Paulson, Bernanke, the president, and the leaders of both parties in Congress had lost control. By 2:15, they had lost the vote. Steve Bartlett at the Financial Services Roundtable was deeply disappointed.
I do think there's a lot of anger, but I think that the level of sort of quiet, hidden majority support for solving the problem is even greater.
But today, the industry and its allies in Washington were fighting off a revolt on two fronts. Liberals and conservatives in Congress both hate this rescue plan for different reasons, and they want different things in the end. Liberals, like Woolsey, believe the federal government completely failed to regulate the banking industry and protect consumers. Conservatives see the roots of the crisis in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They believe those two firms were too close to the government, grew too big, and took too many risks. For Hensarling, the idea of an even bigger government role in the banking industry is a non-starter.
That does put us on the slippery slope to socialism.
And today, free market conservatives like him found the unlikeliest of allies in big government liberals like Woolsey. For a few minutes, they found one thing in common. This bailout package was bad news. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
A lot of people say what's been missing in the marketplace the past 8 or 10 years is a healthy enough sense of fear. No real worries that bad bets would cost investors a whole bunch of money. I think it's safe to say people are plenty scared now, and it's being reflected in what they're doing with their money. Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon has that part of this day's incredible developments.
Market watchers call it a flight to quality. Today, that meant moving your money out of the stock market and into safer government bonds. But the word flight hardly seems to cover it. It was more like a full-fledged stampede.
There's a great deal of fear that is beginning to fan through the markets right now, kind of like a bad forest fire.
Tom Sawanek is chief investment officer at Clearbrook Financial. He says the fire in the credit markets can still be contained if Congress comes up with a workable plan to extinguish it. And he doesn't like to think about the consequences.
If that doesn't happen, then you're going to start seeing 401ks decline in value sharply. You're going to see further erosion of home prices. You're going to see the general cost of borrowing going up. Again, all of this is because of eroding confidence. It's not necessarily because of economic fundamentals.
At J.P. Morgan, U.S. economist Michael Feroli says getting cheap credit will be the least of your worries if your employer can't borrow money to expand the business or make the payroll.
The labor market is just going to probably be pretty awful here for a while. Businesses aren't going to be able to get the sort of funding they need to continue operations in a normal manner, and I think that's where consumers are going to feel it more than in home equity lines of credit or things like that. It's going to be the overall economic weakness.
Today, credit markets were already registering their strong worry about the future. The cost of insuring loans jumped as soon as Congress failed to approve the plan, and Doug Roberts, chief investment strategist at Channel Capital Research, says Congress clearly still needs to do something to calm the markets and prevent disaster.
The big thing right now is nobody is sure what the future will bring, and the government has to deal with this. They have to make sure that really that this is viewed just as an attempt that failed, and not an abandonment of the process.
In other words, failure is not an option. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Wall Street scoreboard for the day reflected the fear we were just talking about. The Dow off 7%, the NASDAQ and the S&P even worse. Oil tumbled almost 10% today on fears that the failure of the bailout bill might lead to tougher economic times. Gold, the safest of safe havens, had a bright and shiny day. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. I can pretty much guarantee you that on most any other day, this next item would have been the top story on this program. One of the biggest banks in the country, Wachovia, has sold itself to Citigroup, which, as it happens, is the biggest bank in the country in terms of assets. As has been the pattern for the past month or so, there were intense negotiations over the weekend. Citi will pay just over $2 billion. That's about a dollar a share for Wachovia, a stock that was worth about $10 a share on Friday. It is a bargain basement price, but should the buyer beware? Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports now from New York.
Typically, when banks buy each other, they do so privately, but typically doesn't apply anymore. Karen Petru is managing partner at Federal Financial Analytics.
This is not a private sector transaction. This is a government rescue.
In order to get Citi to buy Wachovia, the FDIC promised to shoulder most of the potential losses. There are a lot of them. Wachovia purchased a California lender in 2006, which was riddled with bad mortgages. That's added to what is now $312 billion in loans on Wachovia's balance sheet.
Citi is at risk for only $42 billion of that portfolio. The rest of the $312 goes to the FDIC.
In exchange, the FDIC will get $12 billion worth of Citi preferred stock and warrants. Petru says guaranteeing that Wachovia debt was a risk the FDIC felt it had to take, especially, she says, after Wachovia customers started pulling their money out of the bank late last week.
It confronted a lot of extraordinarily unappealing choices and picked the one it believes was the least cost resolution.
And on paper, it certainly looks like a good deal for Citi, says Anand Sundaram, finance professor at Dartmouth's business school. But he says putting two cash-strapped banks together doesn't guarantee the survival of either one.
What does this combination achieve for systemic risk in the system that these two being separate could not have? The honest answer has to be it is not clear.
Sundaram says the speed at which the deal came together didn't help. He wonders whether Citi had adequate time to assess the risks it will soon own. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Coming up, healthcare workers push for their own bailout.
I don't know that, you know, totally socialized medicine is necessarily the answer. I do think that it's kind of a basic right that everyone have access to healthcare and have access to good healthcare.
But first, let's do the numbers. Well, where does one start? With the wah-wah trombones, I imagine. The Dow Industrials cratered 7% today, 777 points. That's an airliner from Boeing, not a stock score. Closed at 10,365. The Nasdaq plunged more than 9%, 199 points. Finished at 1983. The S&P 500 plummeted nearly 8%, 94 points. Ended the day at 1118. Financial stocks, as you might imagine, told the story once again. Wachovia was effectively erased, down 81% after it was sold to Citigroup, as we told you. Citigroup lost almost 12% today. Merrill Lynch sank about 20%. Morgan Stanley fell 15%. A slew of smaller banks suffered devastating losses. National City tanked 63% on fears it may be the next consumer bank to fold. First Horizon coughed up 35%. First Fed Financial staggered 25%. That is the sector to watch, by the way. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Cargill. Collaborate, create, succeed. This is how Cargill works with customers. Stories online at CargillCreates.com. And by Angie's List, providing firsthand consumer reviews on local service like plumbers, painters, movers, and now doctors. Details at AngiesList.com. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Calvert.com. Each song we choose for the rundown on Marketplace is there for a reason. If you hear one that resonates, you can find out what it is on our website. Head to marketplace.org and check out the songs on the right side of the screen. There's also a link to an online store where you can buy each song.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. In New York, the Conference Board releases its monthly Consumer Confidence Index. Voting already? Residents can begin choosing their presidential candidate as early as tomorrow in the state of Ohio. And models are already strutting in the newest threads for spring and summer during Paris Fashion Week. I'm Caitlin Carroll.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. While Wall Street's hopes for rescue vanished on Capitol Hill, in Times Square, New York City today, it was business as usual. Tourists jostled with locals for space in stores and on the sidewalks. Hardly any of them seemed to notice the news being flashed on the crawls 100 feet over their heads. Sally Herships found the one or two people who were paying attention, and she asked them what they thought.
I spoke to Carmen Shamwell just after she got off the phone with her boyfriend. She looked shocked.
Actually, my boyfriend just lost $1,100. It's pretty scary. And personally, it's very scary.
Ray Olson is from Utah. He's in town with his wife, celebrating their anniversary. Ray just retired after 52 years.
Well, I retired recently, and it's very concerning to see pension funds that you've been planning on diminish just in a number of weeks, and the failure and the amount of money that I'm personally losing continues to escalate.
Mark Larson's also from out of town on a visit from the West Coast.
We need new Congress. Replace them. I just walked out. I didn't really catch it all today, but from my understanding is the Democrats are blaming the Republicans, but yet the Democrats had 20 minutes at the end of their vote to change it, and 12 votes would have passed it, and the Democrats could have said that they were responsible for passing the bill.
Walter Wells is a street vendor. They call him the Candyman.
One of the officers told me, he says, "Hey, Candyman, don't sit near the building." I said, "Why?" He says, "Somebody might jump out the window."
In Times Square, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
MBA students are swapping out their textbooks for newspapers as they try to keep up with the pace of change in their chosen profession. Because business is a tough place to try to make a living right now. Professors know it. They're focusing on the financial crisis in the classroom. And at the Harvard Business School, the Career Services Department is snapping into action, too, trying to help out recent graduates. From Boston, Marketplace's Sean Cole reports.
Peter Escher started at Harvard Business School last year actually looking to get out of the financial services sector and into brand management.
With the current events in the marketplace, it seems like a prescient move on my part.
And he says the financial crisis hasn't affected his job search too much.
So you're not freaked out?
No.
In fact, most of the students aren't.
Remember, it only 10% of our student body goes into banking.
Jana Kierstead heads up the MBA Career Services Office at Harvard Business School. She says the population that's really worried is the class of 2008, many of whom graduated into jobs at Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch and so on. And last Tuesday, Kierstead and six other MBA career counselors flew down to New York to meet with some of those freshly minted and very troubled alumni.
We're working with them on a one-to-one basis. We are creating a class of 08 resume book. We are reaching out to current employers to see if they have real-time jobs for these folks.
Is that above and beyond the call of duty? I mean, that seems kind of extraordinary.
Extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures.
Did you come up with that one yourself?
I think so.
On the bright side, Kierstead says, MBA recruiting is actually the last place that a lot of companies want to cut. They're hiring right now for jobs that'll be open 4 to 5 years down the line. And they're going to need people to lead parts of the organization as we, fingers crossed, pull out of this mess. In Boston, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
Maybe it's the big price tag on that bailout bill, or maybe it's fear over what might happen if something doesn't eventually pass. But there is an extraordinary amount of interest in economics and politics this fall. The early numbers from the folks at Nielsen show 57 million people watched the presidential debate last week. That works out to about a third of all the households in this country. For today's installment of our election series, Interested Parties, Sarah Gardner went to a hospital here in Los Angeles to look into what people in the healthcare trenches want from Washington.
Kelly Clore to the Central Work Area, please. Kelly to the Central Work Area, please.
It's mid-morning in the ER at UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles. This is one of the best hospitals in the country, according to U.S. News and World Report. It's also one of the busiest. The staff here treats over 70,000 patients each year. Everybody from surgeons to technicians is ready to spring into action.
Everybody's always experimenting with footwear because we're on the go.
Our emergency medical technician, David White, wears shoes with springy coils on the soles. He's on his feet 12 hours a day, and the shoes help. White does everything from meeting patients on the helipad to doing CPR. He says the ER can be as clogged as an L.A. freeway, in part because many of their walk-ins aren't emergencies. They're ordinary folks using the ER for ordinary healthcare problems, like flu or stomach troubles.
You know, we're fortunate that, on a bad day, our wait here might be 6 or 7 hours. You go to some of the other county hospitals, if you're there less than 12 hours and you're waiting, you don't even bother going up to ask, am I next?
Here's the surprise. White says the people seeking basic care here in the ER aren't just uninsured immigrants or Hollywood freelancers. They're also professionals with plenty of coverage who've run into another traffic jam trying to get an appointment to see their doctors. They either wait or give up and end up in a health crisis. White believes the U.S. needs universal health coverage with an emphasis on preventive care.
And I don't know that, totally socialized medicine is necessarily the answer. I do think that it's kind of a basic right that everyone have access to health care and have access to good health care.
White's view is a common one here. He envisions a system where everybody's covered somehow, whether totally through the government or a combination of public and private insurance. And Washington would have to figure out the details fast. But everybody's skeptical. Nurse Patty Taylor says the first thing Congress should do is, quote, get the pharmacy lobby out of Washington, D.C. But does she believe Congress will do it?
No. I think that a lot of Washington is bought out by lobbyists. I truly believe that.
Taylor started as a nurse 44 years ago, treating wounded soldiers in Vietnam. Her Army career took her all over the world, and she says she admires Western Europe's healthcare system the most.
They may have a waiting list to get to a certain procedure or, you know, whatever, but they are doing very well.
There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that we're not ready for that.
That's Tom Rosenthal, a kidney transplant surgeon at UCLA.
Hi, guys. How's everything going? It looks pretty busy here.
As Rosenthal walks through the surgical recovery area, he says, yes, a European healthcare system is probably more equitable, but it's not perfect. He wants both the presidential candidates to start grappling with the economics of healthcare reform. Take Obama, he says.
He said in front of some rally that we need to cover everybody and we need to do so at lower cost. I don't know how you do that. It's kind of like it's not a serious dialogue.
Covering everybody, the experts say, won't come cheap. Between all our pharmaceuticals, new technologies, and longer living, healthcare is just getting more expensive, and taxpayers can only afford so much. But the hospital's CEO, David Feinberg, says when he talks about the need for rationing care, people look at him like he's crazy.
Everyone wants low health care costs. But when your grandma is sick, you want her in the best intensive care unit. You want 150 specialists to see her. And if they say, well, we could do this last procedure and it may help her, many people say, oh, well, let's go for it.
Feinberg says if he could talk to the president, he'd tell him we need to start thinking about rationed care, even if it's controversial. He'd also tell him the incentives in healthcare are all backwards. Doctors and hospitals don't make big bucks practicing preventive care or promoting healthy lifestyles. Meanwhile, he says Americans should look themselves in the mirror.
You know, we make up 5% of the world's population and consume 50% of the illegal drugs. This is a country that takes things to excess.
Half our health care costs would disappear, Feinberg insists, if we stopped smoking, ate less, exercised more, and consumed less drugs and alcohol. In Los Angeles, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, helping America go green. You can calculate your carbon savings at publictransportation.org. By Constellation Energy, working to provide responsible, sustainable energy to power America's future. Constellation Energy, the way energy works. And by Putnam Investments, offering more of what you want in a retirement plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final thought today, in which we'll hear from the man who arguably had a rougher day than anybody else in Washington, D.C. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson spoke to reporters late this afternoon at the White House, said he was disappointed in today's vote, said that despite 11 high-profile failures, the banking system is holding up, that Treasury's toolkit is substantial but insufficient. And then somebody in the crowd asked the $64,000 question.
Where we go from here is something we're going to be working on with congressional leaders, because we need to get something done, and we're going to be working hard on it.
Speaking of those congressional leaders, Christopher Dodd, chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, tried to pour oil on troubled waters today. Dodd said he is confident some kind of bailout bill will pass within 2 days, he said as well. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media on this crazy, crazy Monday. Today, the Dow plummeted 777 points. That is 7%. The Nasdaq scraped off 199 points, more than 9%. The S&P 500 fell 94 points. That is almost 8% there. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Coming up tomorrow on the program, well, what do you think is coming up tomorrow on the program? From bailouts to Plan B, what is Washington going to do next? I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for being with us.
American Public Media.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.